This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. Looking forward to today's episode as we check in with Brett Ciancia, the creator and author of the Pick Six Previews magazine that we have partnered with yet again this year, picksixpreviews.com. So Brett will be on here in just a little bit. We're going to dive into the ACC with Brett, and also we'll discuss some teams that he's higher on and also that he's lower on. And one of those teams you might be surprised about coming up with later on here in the podcast. So looking forward to that. Good conversation up ahead with Brett. I will get a little personal at the end of the podcast. I'll be honest, I don't know how it's going to go. We will do that at the end of the podcast here regarding something near and dear to my heart. And I imagine many of your hearts as well. Not this particular situation, but just it in general. So I'm curious to see how ultimately it will go as I get a little personal at the post at the end of this podcast. But I did want to hit on this real quickly before we hit a break and welcome in Brett. As you know, it's Media Day season. We had Drew Butler on earlier this week talking SEC. He's at SEC Media Days. Big Ten Media Days will be in Las Vegas next week. I believe I'll be stopping by talking to some folks over there at the Big Ten Media Days. So looking forward to that. Some of familiar names from this podcast will be in town, certainly on there at the Big Ten Media Day. So looking forward to heading over there. And here in town, or here at Circa, I should say, the Mountain West Media Days have been going on. And we've had a bunch of coaches on the show, a bunch of players. We're recording this on Thursday morning. And later on today, we will hear from Coach Ken Niumatalolo of San Jose State. We'll hear from Matt Entz, the head coach of Fresno State. Timmy Chang jumped on the podcast. We have a best bet already on the pod on Hawaii in week zero against Stanford. You actually saw some movement this week in the betting market in that week zero game with Hawaii taking on Stanford. And I think coach is pretty high on this squad year four. And we've seen the market move in that direction. The money line from plus 110 down to even money for Hawaii against Stanford at DraftKings, down from 2-1 on Hawaii against Stanford. And then it's actually a pick'em at the Westgate Superbook. So I'm going to put together a Mountain West preview for you guys with a couple of those interviews. We'll throw that on a pod feed and we'll get some thoughts on the Mountain West too. But I do want to hit on this bet because I placed this bet. I was actually talking to Brad Powers and it was like an aha moment on the show on Wednesday. Wednesday, we were hosting Money Moves for Stormy and JBT as they're doing Follow the Money this week. And Matt Newmans and I were sitting in for them on Money Moves. We had Brad Powers on the show. And obviously, you guys know Brad. He's been on the podcast many times before and very respected college football handicapper. And we were talking some Mountain West with him. And we discussed Boise State, and he felt like they're still the best team. He actually, I believe, said he has Boise State power rated 7 points better than any other Group of Five team. But we discussed San Jose State. And San Jose State heading into this year was predicted to finish third in the conference. And they did lose a lot of production at the wide receiver position in Nick Nash. But it's year two of Ken Niumatalolo at San Jose. And last year, they surprised a lot of us by winning 7 games. They won all their non-conference games, which is certainly helpful for them to get to a bowl game, the Hawaii Bowl, which they lost in multiple overtimes to South Florida. But San Jose State, when you look at their schedule this year and you just think about the Mountain West preseason poll, Boise State was 1, UNLV was 2, San Jose was 3, Colorado State 4. San Jose State doesn't play any of those teams. Obviously, they don't play themselves. They don't play Boise State. They don't play UNLV. And they don't play Colorado State. Also, they get Fresno State at home. They get Air Force at home. And they get Hawaii at home. The teams they have to play on the road, Wyoming, Utah State, Nevada, San Diego State, all perceived to be some of the lower teams in the conference. So We'll dive more into this when we do a Mountain West preview at some point next week. But San Jose State to make the Mountain West championship game is plus 220 at DraftKings. And I told this to Brad, and he said, where is that? And he said, when I get off, I'm going to have to make that bet. So that was a bet that I made. I imagine it's a bet that Brad Powers made. San Jose State to make the Mountain West championship at DraftKings. You hit the tab that says futures, and then to make the title game, San Jose State sitting there at plus 220. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Brett Ciancia, we're going to preview the ACC with Brett. Is he as high on Clemson as the rest of the college football world seems to be? And what does he make of the Miami Hurricanes in 2025? And after that, we'll have a little moment. We'll get a little personal. We'll tell some stories. And hopefully you guys enjoy that a little bit later on in the podcast. As a reminder, please rate, review, and subscribe. Love seeing those five-star reviews continuing to pile in. It's much appreciated as we get closer and closer to the start of the college football season. All right, quick break, then Brett Ciancia, a Pick Six previews after that.
This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
And as promised, we welcome on the author, creator of Pick Six Previews, one of the, if not the best, preview magazine out there. And I'm excited that we are partnered up with Pick Six Previews again this year. So if you get that digital or hard copy, you'll see a couple of VSiN College Football Betting Podcast mentions in that. Brett Ciancia joins us right now. Brett, always appreciate chopping it up with you. And we've been talking about Pick Six Previews on this podcast for a while on VSiN as well. But for those new to the Pick Six Previews world and curious about it, just give us the lowdown on what Pick Six Previews is all about.
Yeah, thanks, Tim. Thanks for having me on. It's the best time of year. It's preview magazine season, and glad to be partnering with VSiN again. But yeah, Pick Six Previews, it's a college football preview magazine like the ones you see on newsstands. But we really focus in on the Power Four, the 68 Power Four conferences. It's a one-man show. It's just me. I'm a Heisman voter. I'm on the All-American committee, the selection committee. And yeah, I think it's a good balance between my advanced stats, but then putting it back into a readable format. Sometimes reading too many acronyms or too many formulas can be a bit too much, but I do have the numbers and the formulas on the left side of the page. But, you know, the text, the writing, I go position by position, really detailed breakdown. So, yeah, I encourage you to check it out. It's picksixpreviews.com. We have a couple sample pages up there. The claim to fame, though, is that there's a site that tracks the prediction accuracy of all of these magazines. And over the last 10 years and 5 years, those two intervals, number one in the country. So it's a point of pride for me. It's what I aim for every year. As a one-man show, it's just that's what I'm going for. So number one over the last 10 years. Go check it out, Pick Six Previews. And yeah, excited to break it down for you. What a wide open season we have coming up. A lot of wide open conferences. We'll hit the ACC today, but all these leagues are pretty exciting races.
Yeah, it's fun diving through it and seeing, you know, some of the bets that I've already put in and then seeing what you have. And I'm like, all right, is this good? Are we on a line here? Are we aligned here? Are we going against each other? But yeah, check it out, picksixpreviews.com. I'm a big fan of it, have been for a number of years, and for good reason, obviously, as well. So yeah, I want to jump into the ACC. We've spent a lot of time here on the podcast recently talking SEC. The Big 12 is so fascinating. We've talked a bunch about the Big 12, especially with their media days unfolding last week. And I wanted to go into the ACC because, you know, certainly, Brett, we've talked a lot of Clemson on this podcast, but we really haven't talked a ton about other teams. I did give out a best bet last week on Syracuse going under their win total, which we can hit on. Curious to get your thoughts on that. But let's start with the big boy. You do have Clemson number one, number six in the country in the preview magazine. Are you buying in on all of this hype? You always get a little bit worried. I know Chris Felica, who's also a big fan of your preview magazine, tends to call it a dog with fleas if it's, you know, too popular of an underdog, right? And I had Chris on a couple weeks ago to talk about Clemson as well. So with what everything that's coming back from Clemson, are you buying in on this hype of the Tigers?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I always look back first on last year's stats, my advanced stats, my game grader formula, it did not have the look statistically of a playoff or a national title team. It really was a stretch. They had a lot of close wins, they took some losses even. So in this 12-team playoff, it's a whole new ball game. So it did not have the advanced stats look of a team that would be a playoff or champion. They do bring a ton back. If returning starters and returning production are your stat, if that's what you look at the most, this is your pick. I think it's almost the entire roster back besides Phil Maffa running back and their tight end, but multiple all-conference guys and a potential All-American at quarterback with Cade Klubnik. So really the play here is that they were above average statistically last year, but with all that returning production, with a lot of future NFLers on the team, look for them to be the ACC favorites. I think that's warranted. I wouldn't go so far as a national title run. I think once you get into the bracket with these superpower teams like Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, Penn State, I think they'll run into some issues. But to win this conference, I think is definitely doable. They should be the favorite. One thing I added this year in the Pick Six Previews magazine, we always talk recruiting and transfers, but how about future pros? How are they stacked up in the 2026 mock NFL draft? I know we're early for a mock draft, but they're out there. So how are these rosters filled with potential pros? Clemson's number two in the country. They have 12 mock draft picks already on their roster. So I like what they have there. A very veteran team. This is their year to break through again and win the conference.
Yeah, I'm with you. It's funny because we talked to Ari Wasserman very early on in the offseason, and at 20-1, he thought that was a big play for Clemson. That's now down to 10-1. So look, I don't blame anyone for not getting into the college football space until this time of year, but you do miss out on some big numbers. Clemson was as high, I believe, as +160 to win the ACC. I took it at, I think, +140. +105 now, but I want to dive into a team that I will see up close and personal Labor Day weekend. I'll be headed down to South Beach to see Miami take on Notre Dame. And, you know, this is a Miami team that had every opportunity to go to the playoff a year ago, but blew it against Syracuse there in the regular season finale, despite a 3-touchdown lead. So Miami comes into this year, and you know, as you point out in your magazine, they're going to be a team that's going to have a ton of talent. They've got a very polarizing quarterback in Carson Beck. What is he going to look like? Win total sits at 9.5. For Miami to make the college football playoff, that might be more of an interesting route to go when you look at what odds are out there right now for Miami to make the college football playoff, and that currently is sitting at +170. What do you make of the Canes this year, and are you high on Miami in 2025?
Yeah, I am high on Miami in a couple of different ways. I like that over-under win total. I think 9.5, they'll hit it. It's at plus money right now, so yep. I like that a lot. They're sitting there in my preseason top 10, and that would impute a playoff bid. I think they're going to make an at-large spot, regardless of what happens in the ACC title game. So I think it's, in a lot of ways, it's the inverse of the Clemson package. When you look at Clemson, we said it's returning starters, an above-average stat profile last year, but now very veteran. It's kind of the flip with Miami, where last year they were the stat team. They were the advanced metrics team from the ACC. I think they were the best ACC team. And you can't rewrite history, of course. You know, go finish off a 21-0 lead on Syracuse, but I think they were the best ACC team last year. And but unlike Clemson, they do lose a lot of starters, so you're going through a little bit of a transition. Cam Ward is gone at quarterback. You're restarting there with Carson Beck. But then again, different than Clemson is their talent profile, the way they're bringing in top 10, top 20 transfer hauls and recruiting from the high school ranks. They're one of only a handful that have done it 3 years straight to go top 25 high school and top 25 transfer. So just the talent that they've acquired and stockpiled there is undeniable. And then lastly, I love their offensive line. I think Cristobal, you could comment some of his in-game strategy, but you can't deny he can build an offensive line. They're going to be elite there again. So I think they're going to be strong. And schedule-wise, I like it because Notre Dame's a tough one. Obviously, you'll be down there seeing that. Florida's tough. From there, though, a lot of winnable ACC games. And I noticed this compared to other conferences, the bottom half or the bottom tier of the conference really drops off in the ACC. So, we can't say the same in the SEC or Big Ten, but in the ACC, once you get outside that top five or six, it really drops off. I see them winning a lot of games, going 10-2 and hitting on those overs.
Yeah, just based off of your rankings, Brett, you've got a pretty sizable drop off. You've got, from a national standpoint, Clemson 6. You've got Miami 9, and then a pretty drop-off to 4 straight ACC teams just on the outside looking in of the top 25. I want to jump to the team you have ranked 30th, which might come as a bit of a surprise to some people, but that's the SMU Mustangs. And schedule wise, you'll break it down, but they do have to play Clemson on the road. They play Miami this year. They played neither one of those teams in the regular season a year ago. They also play Louisville. Granted, it's off a bye in late November. So Kevin Jennings is back for SMU, which is certainly big to have one of the best quarterbacks in the conference coming back. SMU this year, a team that, you know, I think a lot of people from the analytical standpoint were curious about SMU. I did have a win total over on 7.5 on them. They get, you know, 11 wins in the regular season. 8.5 is the number this year. Do we expect a drop off from the Ponies in year two in the ACC?
Yeah, well, as you can tell from that preseason ranking, I'm a big seller of SMU this year. Now, first, let's look back. You know, my hat's off to what they pulled off last year. They broke the model of the non-AQ moving up to the Power 5 level. Historically, that took a couple seasons. They took their growing pains, and then you'd maybe in your fourth or fifth year really make the transition. But they did it right away. They broke the ceiling there. So heck of a run. What helped them last year was in the transfer portal, they stockpiled a lot at their defensive line and offensive line, their lines of scrimmage. They beefed them up to get to the Power 4 level, size and depth of linemen. This time around, they lose a lot of that. A lot of them graduated, especially that front seven on defense is completely gone. They had 9 all-conference guys on defense. 7 are gone. You do have the 2 safeties back. I like that pair, but they're really starting over on defense, and that raises some questions for me. When you lose that many starters, what do you look at? You look, all right, how have they recruited? How have they done with transfer? And, part of this is because they're moving up from the lower tier, but they're dead last in Power 4 in 5-year recruiting. So they're not backfilling with All-American guys. I think that it's going to take some time, definitely a transitional type season. And then the last bit on this, you hit on it, schedule. Last year, they really benefited from their ACC draw. This year, it's tough. You're talking Clemson and Miami, my 2 favorites. And then I see 2 more losses from the non-con. I think they're going to lose to Baylor, a really veteran team from the Big 12. And I think they're going to lose at TCU in a really bitter rivalry game. But this time it's in Fort Worth, and I think it's a great TCU team, a top 25 team for me. So I see 7-5, 8-4 at best, meaning you're under that 8.5. I don't see 9 wins from them. So I'll go under 8.5.
All right. Another team that's kind of lumped in that next group of teams is Florida State, and maybe that's a little bit of a surprise. Win total at DraftKings is 6.5, at Circa is sitting at 7. Look, we all know what last year happened. It was an absolute disaster of a season for Florida State, coming off of the, you know, undefeated ACC championship year a year ago, right? So just 2 wins last season, only 1 in conference, got some really ugly losses down the stretch, getting blown out by a bunch of teams. Do we see a bit of a resurgence here from Florida State? Because, look, if they bounce back, they get to a bowl game, this is a pretty big type of bounce back season. So what do we expect from Mike Norvell's bunch this year?
Yeah, one of the craziest storylines of 2024 last year was the drop off at Florida State. So I wonder what the heck happened there. I try to dig into it, trying to find why. I think part of it still was the hangover effect of that playoff snub. You know, you go 13-0 a couple years back, they get snubbed for the playoff, and that's all these guys focused about for months. The bowl game, they got embarrassed by Georgia. A lot of guys opted out, and then I feel like that just lingered over their head, the playoff snub. So when they come out and they start 0-3, what's that mean? It knocks out all of your goals. Every team goal was already eliminated. You know, playoff was out, national title out, even conference title was out. So I think at 0-3, and this is not an excuse, but I think they just had some mental or locker room problems. And I think that when you look at the talent that's in that building, I think they're a lot better than 2-10. Something was off there. All that to say, you know, no excuses. You got to take care of business. But I think this year they're going to be much improved from 2-10. Another great haul of transfers. I think they really hit in 2023 from the transfer portal. They missed on a lot of spots last year. Hopefully they hit again. You know, it's kind of a pendulum effect with Florida State. One thing you can't deny is the coordinators. I like both hires. They got Tony White from Nebraska and formerly Syracuse, who has built strong defenses with a lot of 2-star and walk-on type guys, has a better talent profile to work with here. And then offensively, it was your Chip Kelly of the 2024 cycle with a head coach stepping down to be a coordinator with Gus Malzahn, leaving UCF to become the play caller at Florida State. So back to X's and O's for him. I like the coordinators. I like another round of transfers. This time they're more experienced transfers too. I mean, these are all conference linemen, guys that have started throughout the Power 4 landscape. So I think they bounced back from 2-10. I don't see any playoff run, but I think over six and a half, whatever the number is there. I think they'll be in that 7-5 range. So, you know, a fringe top 25 team, but a wild card.
You know, a team that really has fared well as a as an underdog is Georgia Tech. And you think back to last year with their outright win over Miami, with their win over, or excuse me, their multiple overtime loss to Georgia. This is a team that has kind of thrived in that role. And, you know, once again, the drinking game here on this podcast, anytime I mention Notre Dame, but if Notre Dame played them fully healthy, I think that would have been a war down there at the Mercedes-Benz Dome. But Haynes King was dealing with an injury. So this is a team that's been building under Brent Key there. This has, I think, been impressive. So heading into this season, Georgia Tech, where are you on the Rambling Wreck? They've got a pretty high-profile game week one. They've got that, you know, midweek game against Colorado on the road where they flip now to the favorite. They get to play Clemson. They get them at home. They avoid Miami. So what do you make of Georgia Tech this year?
Yeah. Well, I think first off, Brent Key, he doesn't get enough credit for what he's been able to pull off here. And you think back, they were a triple option team, a flex bone offense under Paul Johnson for so long. When they made that transition out of that scheme, I mean, they were terrible. It was the Jeff Collins era, one of the worst Power Four teams in the country, arguably one of the worst FBS teams in the country. So that's what he walked into and so quickly has turned them into winners and really strong in the trenches. That's his calling card, his offensive line, and he continues to build there. Things to like from Georgia Tech. I like their quarterback, Haynes King. He's a warrior. He's battled. I like his running back behind him with Haynes. And you know, a couple good transfer additions at receiver. You know the line will be strong. But probably the best play for Georgia Tech is the schedule, because with these mega leagues, these super conferences, and only 8 conference games within them, the schedule lottery is almost everything. So when you look at it, play one of my top 8 in the conference, that means they draw 7 from the bottom half of the league. So a lot of winnable games. I mean, Wake Forest, Virginia Tech, Cuse, Boston College, that should be 4-0 right there. Duke and NC State, maybe you call toss-ups, but I'd still lean Georgia Tech in those two. Pitt, maybe a 50-50 type game, and a likely loss with Clemson. But there's no reason they can't get the 6-2 in the ACC and be in some kind of tie-break scenario to get to Atlanta. So I think they'll beat Colorado in the opener, and that that all adds up to a pretty successful season. So I think they're being slept on nationally, and I have them right there, right outside the top 25.
Win total for Georgia Tech at DraftKings, 7.5 minus 150 to the over on the Rambling Wreck. The other team you have tied for third, so you've got 3 teams tied for third heading into the year. You've got Florida State, you've got Georgia Tech, and then you've got Louisville. Year 3 for Jeff Brohm. This is a team that, you talk about the schedule lottery, and 2 years ago, this team makes it to the ACC championship in large part, and I'm not knocking them, but they got a fortunate schedule break, right? When you looked at who they played in conference, and they lost one conference game to Pittsburgh, but you know they beat Miami, lost to beat Virginia, Virginia Tech, Duke, NC State, Boston College. They didn't have to play Clemson that year. So last year, a little bit of an up and down season for them, as they lose to SMU in a barn burner. They lose to Miami as well. Miller Moss comes in to be their next and latest transfer portal get at the quarterback position, because that's what Jeff Brohm likes to do. I really like that fit. What do you look at when it comes to Louisville heading into this season?
Yeah, well, that 2023 team, the schedule lottery, and they took care of business. You got to give them credit. It was mostly actually defense that year. Of course, Brohm being the offensive wizard, it flipped back to being offense first last year. One of us, the few teams that was top 25 in all my metrics offensively last year. It was great. He's going for his third straight transfer guy, a quarterback here. It's Miller Moss this time, the former starter from USC. Guy that sat behind Heisman winner Caleb Williams, was up and down last year as a starter at USC, eventually got benched in November after a 3-interception game against Washington, but showed some glimmers of hope here for him. It's worked before, and he actually explicitly mentioned wanting to play in Brohm's offense, of why he picked Louisville over Missouri. It was all about Brohm's quarterback development, his scheme, some of this skill talent he has around him. He's got a great running back duo behind him, a great receiver pair to throw to. So I like the offense a lot. I think they're going to be fine. It's just a matter of losing a lot of starters on defense, completely new secondary, completely new front four. So, I like their linebackers. That part's proven, but a lot of it is going to be, can they rebuild this defense? And schedule draw is decent. They do draw two of the top teams. They get Miami and Clemson, plus an SMU that were right near them ranked-wise, 28th versus 30th. It's going to be a toss-up game. I think they beat Kentucky again in the season finale, and they win their other three non-conference games. So you're going to be able to supplement that win total with a non-conference 4-0 slate, I think. Yeah, I have them tied in third up there with Georgia Tech for the race for third.
So the ACC is going to be fascinating. And on the forefront, Monday night of Labor Day weekend, you've got UNC taking on TCU. And we're going to dive more into TCU a little bit later on in some of your teams that you're high on and some of your teams that you're low on nationally. But this obviously is going to be a team that everything that's gone on this offseason with the off-field stuff and Belichick's girlfriend, yada, 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 it's going to be intriguing once they hit the field what they're going to look like. It's been a revolving door in and out for players in the portal. So as you looked at UNC and as you previewed them, how challenging was it to kind of give a really strong analysis on this team? Because I wouldn't say they've been as polarizing as Colorado 2 years ago, but there's a lot of polarization, a lot of unknown about this UNC team heading into this season.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought Colorado up. That was kind of the comp in my head. When you're looking at this vast of a transfer influx, this big of a roster transition, you think back to the 2023 Colorado team, the first year of Deion, where it was just a revolving door. I mean, you had guys transfer in, then transfer out after spring ball, transfer in for fall camp. It was crazy. And you're seeing that at UNC. So many different factors here. The coaching staff itself, a lot of these guys haven't been in the college level. I mean, Bill Belichick himself, it's been, 30 years of the NFL. His son, Steve, actually did a great job last year. He was a first-year coordinator for Washington's defense over in the Big Ten. Turned out the number one passing defense in the country. So I think you're bringing in a guy, at least he's been in the game for a year. But, so much changeover personnel-wise. Almost the entire starting lineup looks new. Some of these guys were rated high as transfers. Some weren't. It's just it's really a mystery, to be honest with you. So if you're looking at angles to bet on them, this is one team I'd actually shy away from. You know, it's just so variable. My gut is telling me it's going to take a second year to really see it click. But then, you know, the other side of it is the ACC has so many winnable one-score games. It's like they're going to be in a lot of close games. And I think that just with the staff alone, their X's and O's and their game management, like maybe they should be able to grind out a couple. So, it's kind of a safe answer, but I'd say stay away from UNC this year, betting wise. It's just so variable, such a wild card. I can't wait to watch it, though. I mean, this is one of the storylines of the whole season, so I can't wait to see it.
Yeah, no doubt. And week one, they get TCU, who I think, to your point, and I'm curious to hear your thoughts on them here in just a moment, they're going to be a fascinating team with Josh Hoover entering this season. So I've been making the rounds the past couple of weeks because, you know, lines move and people ask for best bets. And the one that kind of jumped out to me and I've made the bet is Syracuse under their win total. And, you know, on the surface, people might say you're crazy. They won 9 regular season games. They won a bowl game. They are crushing it in recruiting. How could they take a step back? But you've kind of hit the key buzzword of the schedule lottery. And when you look at their non-conference schedule, they play Notre Dame and Tennessee, where they're double-digit dogs in both of those games. And their road trips this year at Clemson, at SMU, at Georgia Tech, and at Miami. Looking at that schedule, there's no Cal, there's no Wake Forest, there's no Stanford. I think Fran Brown, Brett, is got this program headed in the right direction. But what do you expect from the Cuse in 2025? Because, boy, that schedule's rough. And they do not bring a ton of production back.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I have them projected towards the bottom of the ACC. I have them 15th out of 17, third worst. And then on the Power Four landscape, 63rd out of 68. So bottom five, bottom six. I see a huge, huge drop off from last year. And first, give him credit. I mean, it was a great breakthrough season. He won the Newcomer Coach of the Year award last year, the Bear Bryant Award, and he deserved it. Great quarterback play, good receivers, pretty solid defensive front four, front seven. Thing is, everybody's gone. I mean, literally everybody's gone. Some of the few returning starters that they were going to build the team around, they transferred out after spring. Pena, the receiver, going to Penn State. A couple of their defensive tackles that they were going to build around both transferred out after spring. So the few starters they had back, they just got poached in May. So there's really a lot of question marks here. And well, all right, so you look back to the fundamentals. How's their recruiting? How's their transfer game? And I know that recruiting had a nice year in 2024, but really wasn't that great. It was 37th nationally. They fell to 42nd nationally this year, and they're not backloading with top 25 talent. So I see a huge drop off statistically. It even was one of the worst defenses by my numbers last year too, to start with. So I think when you take your quarterback McCord out of there and all your receivers and tight ends, it's going to step back. And then lastly, you're right about schedule. You, in the non-conference, Tennessee, that's a loss. Notre Dame, that's a loss. So I see 2-2 from the non-con. And then as a team with a 5.5 win total, that's talking about middle or lower tier of the conference. You want to count how many games they're playing against other middle or bottom tier teams. They only draw Boston College. In my bottom eight of the league, only one opponent, Boston College, meaning seven of their conference games are against the top section. So it's going to be tough to grind out six wins. I don't see it. So I'd go under 5.5.
I'm curious about Stanford in so many ways. Week zero, we just talked to Timmy Chang yesterday on VSiN. And I love Timmy Chang. I'm pulling for the Bows this year. And that's kind of a, you know, an intriguing week zero games on CBS and an opportunity for Hawaii to get a big win. Essentially what I said about Hawaii, which was, I kind of think their win total, which is 5.5 at BetMGM, hinges on that game. So I bet Hawaii to win that game as opposed to wait all season on their win total. But when you look at Stanford, and we already talked about a team like UNC, how challenging was it for you to know what this Stanford team is going to look like this year, knowing that they had a mass exodus of talent, they have a coaching changeover late in the cycle? So what do you make of Stanford, and are they, how low are they amongst the 68 Power Four teams that you have?
Yeah, well, they're dead last in the Power Four landscape. That sums it up there. Dead last in the conference. Last year, they were 66 of 68, so third worst, and that was only in front of Florida State and Purdue. I see them dropping below both. You hit on it. It's a lot of starters gone, and then a lot of starters transferred out. Another wave of starters left after their coaching change there in March. But it's interesting, I think, longer term view of Stanford, because, you know, the game is changing so much. You always remember the first moment where like a new category was unlocked. And on College Game Day in late December, Andrew Luck went on there and he announced that he's the new general manager of Stanford football. And at that time, I know a lot has changed in 6 months, but at that time in December, that's the first we ever heard of a general manager. So that was a game changing moment for the sport, or at least the first big one. And then what happens is 3 months later, he's firing coaches. The head coach got fired, and he brought Frank Reich in, his former coach from the pros. I don't know. There's just so many question marks, and there's just no fundamental there to pick for them. I mean, both sides of the ball struggled the last 5 years. There's just really no inkling of a sudden breakthrough. So I'm keeping them at the bottom. I don't really see why it would change this quick. I think the more fascinating picture is, how are they going to fit into this landscape long term? They have the academics, which is a pro and a con for recruiting and transfers. So where do they fit long term into this Power Four landscape? For 2025, I see it as a big struggle.
All right, before we put a bow on the ACC, we haven't hit on all the teams. It's almost impossible to hit on every single team when you're doing a preview, and I don't want to give away the whole farm of the Pick Six preview. So go over to picksixpreviews.com to check out all of what he wrote up there. But that being said, anyone that we miss that you find fascinating from a win total standpoint, a long shot to win the conference or make the conference championship, anyone that we missed out on looking at the ACC?
I'll throw Pittsburgh into the discussion. And, I think it's an interesting team. Last year, they opened up 7-0, and it was out of nowhere, and they were getting some AP rankings and some playoff buzz at 7-0. And then two things happened. Their quarterback, Eli Holstein, got injured, and then their starting left tackle, their best guy, got injured. So that caused the line to keep shifting around their lineups. The offense was broken. And they end up losing six straight. So now with Holstein back with a healthy line and really a strong front seven, this linebacking core, they call themselves the Sharks. I don't know if you've seen this, but these three linebackers, that could be the best trio in the country. pick sixes, sacks, and fumbles. They're all American candidates. It's pretty cool. So with that linebacking core and a strong front seven, that's Narduzzi's calling card is aggressive front sevens and attacking defenses. I think they're going to be pretty good. So, yeah, keep an eye on them as a middle-tier team that could maybe rise into that race for third place. So, yeah, and when you talk schedule, I see a lot of winnable games. I see Stanford and Cuse and BC. These should be all be wins. NC State looks like a 50-50, but probably I lean Pittsburgh. So there's four league wins right there. Duquesne and Central Michigan from the non-con. I think they're going to beat West Virginia, a transitional year for them in the backyard brawl. Notre Dame's a loss, but so, yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like from Pittsburgh. I think keep an eye on them, take a flyer on them, maybe as a long shot.
Pittsburgh 6.5 plus money to the over on the Panthers this year. All right, let's go to some teams that you might be a little bit higher on than your average college football person out there. And we'll start with Alabama. We'll go with one of the big boys. You know, I got a text message, I would say a month or two ago, Brett, from a friend of mine who had, you know, a free bet at a sports book. He said, hey, I want to put in a college football future. And at the time, I think at the book that he had the free bet at, Clemson was like 15 or 16 to one, and Alabama was at that same price. And I said, I'd say Alabama or Clemson. I think the upside is there for Bama, and Clemson, as we talked about in the ACC, would be the two, you know, perceived quote, air quote, longer shots. You look at Alabama, they have to go to Georgia September 27th. They have to play South Carolina on the road after a big one against Tennessee, wrap up the season against Auburn, always play LSU. Oklahoma's a team that is fascinating this year, but I think you and I might be in lockstep here. Win total sits at 9.5 for Kalen DeBoer's squad. If they hit with Ty Simpson, watch out. This could be a team that wins the national championship.
Yeah, absolutely. I like the value there. I like them over the 9.5. I like them if you're looking for an SEC value pick to win the conference at plus 500, 5-1. I mean, I think they're right there with Texas and right there with Georgia. A couple things that started to stand out in my research with Alabama this time around. I think first, you look at their offensive coordinator hire of Ryan Grubb. When you hire DeBoer as your head coach, you want to get the whole DeBoer experience, which is their great passing attack, their great schemes. And they didn't have that last year as Grubb tried the NFL out for a year. Bringing him back into the fold, bringing him to Tuscaloosa, I think is a game changer. At quarterback, you know, I loved Jalen Milroe at times. I think he was a great athlete last year. But, yeah, I think this offense needs a pure passer, and they have three to choose from. So it might be Ty Simpson to start. We'll see how that shakes out. But, you know, you can't go wrong. They have a lot of talent there at quarterback, and I think it'll fit the scheme better. But really the biggest deciding factor for me this year was defense. When you watch the NFL draft, normally you expect, 10 to 12 Bama names to be called. It's always Alabama every round. Last year, only five got picked, and you're wondering what happened. They're all back in Tuscaloosa. So it's mostly all on defense, too. So a lot of NFLers stacking their front seven. And their secondary. So, you know, number one recruiters in the five-year average, a lot of great transfers coming in. But then here's the kicker is that my NFL mock draft number in there, number one in the country in mock draft picks. I know we're still a year out from that, but it gives you a little estimation there. 15 future picks, it looks like, on this roster. So, I mean, a lot of star power, second-year coach bonus on both sides of the ball. I like Alabama. I have them playing in Atlanta against Texas. I have them number four in the country, and all that would compute over. So everywhere, 9.5 and for the playoff.
Well, let's get to another team in the big, in the SEC. Excuse me. I almost said Big 12. Once upon a time, they were in the Big 12, but it's been a minute since they were in that conference. And that's Texas A&M, another year two coach, Mike Elko. They certainly had some ups and downs a year ago, and they had an opportunity in the regular season finale, Brett, to go to the SEC championship, which obviously would have given them an opportunity to maybe make the college football playoffs. So you look at Texas A&M this year, they have a road trip to South Bend in the middle of September. They do not, if I'm looking at this right, they do not play Alabama this year on that schedule. They don't play Georgia either. And it was interesting, I had on Stanford Steve, also friend of the Pick Six previews, and he said the most intriguing quarterback to him is Marcel Reed this year. And he is a guy, Brett, when you think about the discussion nationally of quarterbacks in the SEC, it starts with Arch Manning, you know, questions about Gunnar Stockton, obviously Garrett Nussmeier, DJ Lagway, John Mateer. These guys are all getting a lot of hype this year. And it feels like Marcel Reed, to Steve's point, is getting overlooked a little bit. So what do you make of Reed? What do you make of Elko year two? And does Texas A&M make a shot at the playoff, plus 215, win total sitting at 8.5 this year for Giga Maggie.
Yeah, well, with Reed, this is the kind of guy that defensive coordinators hate because you probably scheme the play up well, you get a good pass rush, and he breaks it down. He'll, you know, he's so elusive in the pocket, he'll scramble and pick up 15 yards on the ground when everything else is executed perfectly. So I think he brings that burst on chunk plays, that scramble ability. I want to see him develop in his passing game, but I think we're being tough critics on the guy. He was a freshman last year, and he was thrown in midseason. He did play sixth nationally amongst freshmen in QB ratings, so solid start. I think you see a second-year bonus. But everything else about A&M I like. Their offensive line brings back all five starters. I think that was a strong spot for them last year. You saw against Texas they had maybe some limitations at receiver, but they addressed that pretty well from the transfer portal, bringing in a couple guys. Concepcion from NC State was all-conference. Craver was an SEC starter. So I like that they've supplemented there. Their recruiting has been top 10 for quite some time, top 10 transfers. So really every number you'd look at is pretty strong. Second year from Mike Elko, you know I love my second year bonus. I keep saying it, but it's so true. It's a good trend to look at the improvements that you get a second year in. And he's done it at Duke. He's done it everywhere. Even here as a defensive coordinator at A&M, he's done it. So, yeah, a solid team here. I think you're going to see much improved from them from how they finished up last year. Very veteran, returning production on both sides of the ball. So yeah, I would take a flyer on them 8.5. I have them fifth in the SEC, 12th overall. Really, the swing game of the year for them is probably the Notre Dame game, because if they were able to go into South Bend and get that W, that gives them one less or one more mulligan in conference. You know, the goal is to get 10-2 from the SEC. So whether that means a perfect non-conference, you just do the math on that. So I think Notre Dame is really a swing game for their whole season.
Yeah, win total, once again, 8.5, as you mentioned, a little plus money to the over, and plus 215 to make the college football playoff. Let's stay in the state of Texas. You mentioned them already because they opened up the season. They do open up the season, against North Carolina, and that's TCU. 2 years removed from making the magical run to the national championship game. Obviously, they got blown out in said national championship game, but they did beat Michigan on the road to that national championship game. And you know, one of the quarterbacks that we've discussed a little bit here on the podcast, and we really discussed it with David Hale when he joined us, is that Josh Hoover seems to be getting a little bit overlooked in a lot of people's eyes as a returning starter this year. And TCU, when you look at their odds to win the Big 12, they're at plus 850 at DraftKings. Win total, as mentioned, sitting at 6.5. TCU is a team that you expect to have a pretty good season this year. And in an unpredictable conference, would you be shocked if they're playing for the Big 12 in early December?
No, would not be shocked at all. I think that with the Big 12, you can maybe start to see the power returning to the state of Texas. When you look at high school recruiting from TCU, when you look at all the returning starters at Baylor, if you look at the transfer hall from Texas Tech, I just think that these three programs are likely to end up, two of them, playing in the Big 12 title game. TCU has as good a case as anybody. And I think you're right about Hoover. I think he's the most overlooked quarterback nationally. I think that's fair. With quarterback, I like quantity and quality. You know, if you're in a pass heavy offense, maybe some of that is just counting stats, but he filtered into a couple good categories last year. He was one of just four quarterbacks in the country with 300 yards a game. There's your quantity, but also top 20 quarterback rating. That's more quality stats. So he joined Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, and Jackson Dart. That's pretty good company. You'll notice he's the only one returning for 2025 from that category. So I love their quarterback. Their receiver room is deep and talented. They got four guys that are all former top recruits and game changers there. Secondary is really veteran now. Bud Clark could be an All-American. Linebacking core I like a lot. I was on the phone with Coach Dykes, Coach Sonny Dykes, and he was just rattling off all these names, and I kept forgetting, like, oh, yeah, that guy's back, that guy's back. These are guys that were great at other conferences, like Caleb Elam's Orr. He was all-conference over in the old Pac-12. It's just – somehow TCU, I mean, I think they're flying under the radar here. I have them in my top 25. I don't think anybody else will. Their win total is 6.5, I think, and it might have been bet up to 7.5. I still like it there. Take a flyer on them to win the conference at, what, plus 800. So, yeah, keep an eye on TCU. Nobody talking about it, but still some good value.
Yeah, 13-1 at Circa if you have the ability to bet on Circa, and that's a pretty juicy number there for an unpredictable conference. I did want to take a quick sidestep here because I, you know, We saw eye to eye on Syracuse, which makes me feel good. But I wouldn't say we're not seeing eye to eye here, but I thought you made a valid point on Utah. So Utah is a team that I've talked about a bunch in the most previous podcast. I did mention that I put in a bet on them to win the conference at 6-1. But you've talked so much about the schedule, and they do not necessarily win the schedule lottery. So what's your thought process on Utah this year?
Yeah, well, to the Pick Six Previews readers, they're used to me being really high on Utah. For a while, that proved me right. They were a really physical team, you know, cutting against more of the finesse teams in the Pac-12. They earned me a lot of those accuracy points we talked about. But but last year, they disappointed, and I thought they were going to go in and win the conference in their first year. Part of that was the injury to Cam Rising, their quarterback. And then their injuries to the second stringer, the third stringer, the fourth stringer, all the way down. They were on to their fifth string quarterback. So, but that doesn't excuse the rest of the team. I think that they have some roster holes at receiver. Even out of spring ball, they announced their number one receiver, Zachariah Williams, and he goes and transfers to USC a day later. So I just see a lack of talent at receiver, a lot of question marks there. The defense is great. I mean, Morgan Scalley, every single year, he continues to build a machine on defense. So we know we have that. And that's why I do still have them in my top four of the conference. I think that's strong enough to just get them up to that top tier. But offense is the big question. They're switching it up. New coordinator, new system from New Mexico. Great quarterback to watch, Devin Dampier. He's so elusive in the pocket. I think he was number one in quarterback evasiveness. I think it was like 4% of pressures he was sacked on, which is number one in the country. So, it's just too questionable for me on offense, the lack of talent at receiver, at running back. I love their offensive line. Like there's enough pros here, a lot of enough strong points to talk about, but a lot of questions too offensively.
Yeah, well, I'm a big Devin Dampier guy, as everyone knows who listens to this podcast. So I'm all in on Dampier, and hopefully he can hit, and Utah could take it the distance. Well, you mentioned the physicality of Utah, and you think back to 2022 in my backyard of Las Vegas, and they take on USC. Caleb Williams is hindered with an injury, and they go out and they punk them. Now, they beat USC twice in that year. They had that epic game where Dalton Kincaid went off in the regular season, and then they won the conference championship. Ultimately, that was the bowl game in which Cam Rising got hurt against Penn State. But looking at USC this year, it seems like they're a bit of a buy low candidate, a high risk, high reward type of team heading into this year. They're sticking with Jaden Maiava, which I think is curious, but Lincoln Riley, the one thing I would say you can give him credit is quarterbacks and knowing good quarterbacks. So when you look at a USC team whose win total 7.5, earlier this offseason, there were some 50-1s out there to win the Big Ten. That has now been chopped in half at most shops, 25-1. Brett, is USC a high upside team in 2025?
Yeah, they made my list, and we were talking before the show about teams I'm higher on than the market. It's one of them's USC. When you look at this Big Ten landscape, I see a big three at the top. It's Ohio State, Penn State, Oregon. I think they're the giants this year, and then a little bit of a drop off to a race for fourth. USC is my pick there for fourth. When you look at their win total at 7.5, I see them winning 9. I see them getting to 9 wins this year. And a lot of that is because, and I know we're talking USC, but it's also a hint at Illinois, my view on Illinois, yeah, because I'm selling them big time. I love what they did last year. I just don't see it continuing. So why I'm saying that is their fifth game of the year is at Illinois. And I think that USC will be 4-0 heading to Champaign in late September. If you win that one, which I think they will, that gets you to 5-0 and you're almost at your total, but at the halfway point. So, I love them at 7.5. They'll even, I think, get to 9. When you're looking at talent profiles, they have the recruiting, they have the transfers. Saw they were the number one spender in the conference this year. I don't know how accurate that is, but where there's smoke, there's fire. It's kind of a good indicator that they were all in on this transfer portal again. So I like their talent level. I like their coordinator on defense, Danton Lynn. And you already hit on it. If you're ever going to give a guy a benefit of the doubt in a position group, it's probably Riley at quarterback. So, and they added a lot of talent at receiver. So, yeah, I like them getting to definitely the 7.5. I see a 9-win team here.
All right, you mentioned it, so let's jump into it. Illinois, this is a very polarizing team this offseason, and I've already dispelled it. I will hit it again here. They are not this year's Indiana. Indiana was 100-1 to make the playoff, 200-1 at some shops. Illinois is in that 5 or 6 to 1 range, so they're not even comparable. Illinois won 10 games a year ago. They won their bowl game. They are one of the most teams with the highest returning production. But this is a team that you're not drinking the Kool-Aid on. So why are you lower on Illinois than most?
Yeah, right. Well, they're not this year's Indiana. If you want a comp from last year, I would call them this year's Missouri or this year's Virginia Tech, who were teams that in 2023, they were trending up and then they returned their whole starting lineups and were getting a lot of buzz because of that. But I don't think the fundamentals were there for either one, Virginia Tech or Missouri. And you saw them both tank this year. I know relatively. I know Missouri had a decent year, but there was talks of playoff for them. And I never bought into it, had them in the bottom half of the conference last year. So I think Illinois is this year's Missouri for me, where I'm selling against the market. Everyone is loving Illinois with their returning starters number. But you'll see this in Pick Six previews on the Illinois page. My advanced stats did not like Illinois. My game grader had them 35th in the country out of 68 Power 5. That's almost below average. Offense was only 33rd and defense 60th. So I just, you know, on an advanced stats profile, they did not look like a 10-win team. And now that reverses back to a tougher schedule draw. And, you know, I like what they did. Again, I love Brett Bielema, how he grinded out 10 wins. But I think that roster has hit its ceiling. So I think you're going to see a step back. So I would fade Illinois. I'm fading them again. Got them 9th in the conference. Not going to make many friends from Champaign, like I did last year. Did not make many friends in Columbia, Missouri, or Blacksburg, Virginia. But that's just part of the game. Maybe in a few years I'll be high on them again. But selling Illinois this year.
All right, we'll wrap on this. A team that opens up the college football season. Kansas State takes on Iowa State over in Dublin. There will be plenty of Busch Lights being consumed there by the Iowa State faithful, but will they be drinking Busch Lights all season long to commiserate with losses? Because you are not a big believer in the clones this year.
Yeah. So, I think it's my 14th year doing Pick Six previews, and I think this is the most wide open conference I've ever forecasted. And I think it goes to show you at Big 12 Media Days, the coaches did a poll predicting the winner of the conference. The coaches picked Kansas State versus Iowa State, and goes to show you those two are not even in my top five. I have Kansas State 6th and Iowa State 7th in the Big 12. So, it's a wide open conference. They're all top 25 caliber teams, but with Iowa State, the play last year coming into the year was that they were one of those returning starter teams. They had 20 starters back, and they are not really in the recruiting and transfer markets. They're more the player developers, and credit them. They are probably the best at player development. So, that formula worked. They had 20 starters back, they're veteran, and they went and played for the conference title. But now you look a year further down the road here, and only 8 starters are back. So they are going through a transition in their starting lineup. I love Rocco Becht, the quarterback. He's probably going to steal a couple wins they shouldn't have had. But the rest of this roster has question marks. They're younger than usual. And in a really crowded upper half of this conference, I shake them out as 7th. So a little bit fading Iowa State this year.
All right, we'll wrap on this. Pick6previews.com. I want to hear about Pick 6 Plus here in just a moment. But you live in the Keystone State of Pennsylvania, and you've got Penn State number 1. Do you think the Nittany Lions win the title this year?
Yeah, based in Pennsylvania here, you hear about it all the time from Penn State fans, and it's all about the Ohio State problem. You know, can they finally beat Ohio State? And I think this is their chance to do it. They have a little window here, this one-year window, where you're catching Ohio State and Oregon both going through major transitions to their starting lineups. They're going to be very young teams. And with Penn State, they're the opposite. They're extremely veteran. They were a stat giant for me last year, top 10 in all my advanced numbers. They played well in the playoff, really one bad throw away from being in the national title game. And what happened in January was all their pro guys, most of them that could have gone pro, are back at Penn State. So they reloaded there. And I really like the running back stable. Their offensive line has 4 all Big Ten guys. I can go on and on, but I like this team as a veteran team to win more of a transitional Ohio State and Oregon games this year. So they're my pick to win the conference. And right now my number one preseason pick.
All right. Tell us about Pick 6 Plus, because Pick 6 Previews obviously helps us all get ready for the season, but you're going to be doing a little in-season data for us that we're going to be able to obtain.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much there with Pick Six Plus. It's a new feature. You know, we all love the preview magazines, but once the season kicks off, I want refreshed data week to week. So what it is, it's all the numbers and stats that you like from the preview magazine, but refreshed each week. So it's going to release every Tuesday from week zero through the playoff bracket. And what's in there, you have team profiles. You know, you go to the Ohio State page, you see all their advanced stats, all their normal stats, my game grader, and then also who they're playing that week. So you can compare statistically and visually against each other, the positional matchups and the unit matchups. And then for more on the betting side, we do have the game logs in there, all the against the spread information, but also this stuff too, the situational splits. I know a lot of gamblers like to look at this. How's a team coming off a bye, or how's a coach as a home favorite or a road underdog? All those situational splits you see. But how I do it is I break it down where it shows you which ones specifically are active that week. So it'll highlight an obvious green. You know, these five are active. Here's how they've been the last year, the last 3 years, the last 5 years. Everything's on there. I mean, talent profiles, who has more mock NFL draft picks, who has more four stars. I just want to put a comprehensive piece together because I know in the fall we're scrambling looking for information, you know, 10 different tabs open on your screen trying to find info. Here it is all on one page per team. But go check it out, pick6previews.com. You can see the sample document on there, a couple sample teams. And yeah, I mean, I'm really excited to launch this thing.
He's Brett Ciancia, pick6previews.com. You can get a hard copy. You can get the digital copy. You can get both like I have. Make sure to check it out. And we're fired up to be partnered up once again with Pick Six Previews this year. Brett, awesome stuff. Always love chopping it up with you. And I know we'll do it again soon.
Yeah, thanks again, Tim. Good luck this year to you and all listeners. I think it's going to be a great season. And I can't wait to kick this thing off, man. 5 weeks to go.
Back here on the podcast and wrapping things up here. And as I mentioned in the open, we're going to get a little personal. I don't tend to do that at VSiN or on this podcast, but you know, I saw a clip 3 years ago from someone certainly that I respect with as much regard out there in the business. And that's Scott Van Pelt. And he went on his show and he did about a 5-6 minute, one big thing on his dog, Otis, who had just passed away. And it meant a lot to me. I know it was received very, very well. And it took a lot of courage to do that on national television with millions of people watching. And this is, as much as I would love to believe that millions of people are listening to this podcast, I know it's not the case, but I know we've got a very good audience and one that I love you guys and you guys keep coming back and it's so great. But you know, we had to do the unthinkable this week, and we had to make the decision, the impossible decision, to put down our dog. And similar to that clip that Van Pelt put out there 3 years ago about his dog Otis, it was my first dog. It was my wife and I's first big responsibility. We were a month into our marriage when we decided to adopt our dog. And I wasn't a dog guy. We didn't have dogs growing up. We had a cat late when I was in high school that my, you know, brother found as a stray in college, but I was not a dog person. I didn't dislike dogs, but I wasn't infatuated with dogs. Well, that has changed. I am all in. They are the best, and I miss them dearly. And you know, the pain that I feel right now is one that, you know, I know it will go away as time goes on. But he was the best, and I know all of us think our dogs are the best. But I'm going to tell you some stories about him and just what made him so special to us. But there are ties to college football to it. So I'll tell you the story of how he got his name. So as you all know, and drinking game commence, I'm going to talk Notre Dame. I am a Notre Dame fan, shockingly. And my wife and I, we got engaged in 2011 and we got married in June of 2013 because, as you know, fall weddings should be illegal. So we got married in June of 2013, and we always knew that we were going to get a dog after we got married. And in the midst of that engagement was the 2012 Notre Dame football season, which was this magical ride by Notre Dame where they went undefeated and then ultimately met their maker in January against Alabama. And we know that all played out. And congratulations to any of you who laid it with Alabama, maybe one of the easiest bets you'll ever make in your life. But obviously the best player on Notre Dame that year was Manti Te'o. And, you know, he was a guy that Notre Dame fans have always kind of been in on Manti because of the decision to go to Notre Dame in 2009 when Notre Dame was at a pretty low point in the history of the program. But he picked Notre Dame over USC. He was a five-star recruit out of Hawaii. And after Charlie Weiss was fired, he stuck around and had a big junior year, comes back for a senior year, and he's the runner-up for the Heisman Trophy. Obviously, all the Lene Kakua catfishing stuff too. But during that season, which was so great, and my wife and I are having a blast watching these games, and I'm having, you know, just the thrill of a life. I went to the Michigan game that they won, and we wore all the lays for Manti. And I really thought that was a pretty cool name for a dog. My wife, a bit hesitant. But she wanted to do what's called a first look at our wedding, which is you do the pictures before the wedding. And I, being the traditional kid, said, nah, I'd rather do it after the wedding. And we went back and forth, and she said, all right, I'll make you a trade. You can name our dog Manti if we can do a first look. I'm in. Done. So we get married, come back from the honeymoon. A couple weeks later, late July, we adopt Manti. And man, he was challenging in the beginning. He was this ball of energy. He had those razor teeth that everyone remembers in puppies. And man, he was hard. He was hard to figure out. But we figured it out. And at the time, I was doing mornings at ESPN 980 in Washington, D.C. So I would get up early. I would go in. I was the morning drive anchor. And then I would come home at around 11 o'clock. And I would take Manti out of the crate that he was just put in, I don't know, a couple hours prior before my wife went to work. And then we would just hop in the car. And we lived in Ellicott City, Maryland, which if you're familiar at all with that area, it's surrounded by Patapsco State Park. And it's got all these different trailheads. And we just hit them up every day. And you know what's funny is that I told this story recently to someone. Those hikes with my dog actually made me a better broadcaster, because all I would be doing is listening to podcasts or listening to live radio. And I actually listened to, believe it or not, a ton of SVP and Russillo, which was my favorite radio show and still is, I'll be honest, to this day, my favorite radio show. I think it's the best one that I've ever heard put together from a national standpoint. And they talked a lot of college football, so that always got me excited. But they would do a best of, and I would listen to it. And then there came a point in time a little bit later on where I was doing mornings, and then I would come home, I would walk Manti, and then I would go back in and do an evening show. And I would take some of their topics and tweak them to how they could ultimately be DC centric. So those hikes, those early hikes, man, they are such an early memory of mine. And just walking around, and he was just such an outdoor dog. I thought early on that I could let him off the leash. Hey, I could do this. He'll come back, right? And for anyone that knows the Maryland area, there's a lot of deer in Maryland. And I had Manti off the leash. I don't know how old he was, maybe a year old. And he took off, gone. And I called my wife in a frantic, maybe a minute, two after he took after these dogs. I'm like, are these deer? And I said, I think he's gone. I don't know where he is. And sure enough, here he comes, tail or tongue out of his mouth, almost touching the ground. Just wanted to chase some deer, but he always came back. And you know what was interesting about him? Every dog's different. obviously, but that dude, he never wanted to be left alone. He never wanted to go outside in the backyard. He just always wanted to be with us. It was hard to leave him early on because he would cry so much when we leave him. And then he figured it out. And I remember the first time we ever left the house, we had moved, we were in a townhouse, and we used to put him in this room in the basement that had a big couch, and he would just jump up on the couch. And we left the door open, and we came back and we're like, oh my God, we left the door open. Did he rip things apart? Did he wreak havoc everywhere? And our house at the time, you drove into the garage and you opened the door, and then there was one room, and that was that basement room. And then you would go quickly to the steps, and he was just laying there on the landing. It's like, what's up, guys? You're back. So he just quickly evolved into this incredible dog that just loved going out to the beach, going out on swims. He loved the beach, man. And we lived about two and a half hours away from Bethany Beach, Delaware, where my folks still have a house to this day. And we loved the off season because we would just let them go nuts on the beach. It's crazy how smart these dogs can be. You know, you see kids just getting wrecked out there going into the ocean, chasing waves, right? Getting flipped over, whatever it may be. And we were curious if he would ever go into the ocean, and he eventually did. And I remember after one time where he got pretty, wrecked by a wave, he kind of figured it out. He waded back. He looked. He jumped over the waves into the water. And, some of my fondest memories are the times that we took him to the beach, man. And just, he would just go crazy out there, just digging holes. I think my favorite one, you all have these moments of dogs that you just remember. And he'd be so tired, and instead of digging with both hands, he would just take one arm and just be like, no, I still want to do it. Still want to dig that hole. But the beach was the best. My wife's grandparents had a house up in the Poconos where he could go swimming, and he would just go for hours. And during COVID, we went up to the Poconos. This is before I moved out to Vegas and joined VSiN. And my son, I think, was 2 at the time, and it was my wife, my son, and his grandmother. And they went in a canoe, and they left the dock, and they start going out. And I told you, he didn't like to be alone. And he took off. He just kept swimming after them. And they eventually had to come in because he just was like, I don't think they're safe. I'm going to protect them out there. He always wanted to be with us. He wanted to snuggle with us. I know I'm all over the place. I did not write a script like SVP, and I've gone long, and I apologize. But he slept in our bed. But initially, he was not going to, right? And this was, he hadn't even turned 1 yet. And my wife had a huge job interview. And for whatever reason, we had him in his crate. It was in our bedroom. And he was crying and crying and crying. I was so mad. I'm like, I can't believe we're going to let you sleep on the bed tonight. And from that day on, he slept on that bed basically for the rest of his life. Smack dab in the middle of us, he became 80 pounds, 85 pounds. And he just, boom, right there in the middle of us. But, there's so many stories I could tell you. And I appreciate, you guys just letting me go here. And hopefully this comes out well. But circling back to football, he didn't love when I watched Notre Dame games. He could sense that there was anxiety. He could sense that I was frustrated. And I have this picture of Manti from 2015. So he was 2. And I'm watching Notre Dame Stanford. It was the regular season finale in 2015. And both teams are top 10, which I know is kind of crazy to think about now, considering Stanford is wretched. But both teams are top 10. And this was Brian Kelly's, I would say, most talented team, I would think. I'll have to ask my guy, Mike Sanford, who was the OC at the time. But Notre Dame had a bunch of injuries and DeShone Kizer was their quarterback, and they were rolling. They were sixth in the country. And if they beat Stanford, there was a chance they would make the playoff. And Notre Dame scores a touchdown with, I think, 20 seconds to go. And there's a picture because Manti was, because it was a stressful game. He was on my lap, all 80 pounds. And there's a picture my wife took. I put my hands up in the air, both fingers, as Kizer scores. And Manti's just looking up like, I think this is good. I don't think we have the aftermath of when Stanford kicks a game-winning field goal and wins the game 38-36. But, I mean, this dude just loved – he loved to be walked. He loved going outside, exercising. I mean, to the day he died, man, he would go on multiple mile walks. And, you know, I'll get into the cancer and that, all of that here in just a moment. But that's what he wanted. He was stubborn. He would throw his shoulders into his harness if we tried to turn him around. He would take you on a walk. We've all had dog sitters and whatever. I got a text from an old neighbor when we put the announcement up on Facebook, and he said he still remembers Manti just taking him on a walk. He led you the way. He took you where you needed to go. And that's just who he was, man, his whole life. He needed walks. He loved walks. And he would tell you when it was time to be done. And he would just keep going and going. You know, in our neighborhood, there's a Starbucks like 2 miles away. And we would drop off our son sometimes at school and walk up there to Starbucks. And he would get so excited. He would get, you know, water from Starbucks. And his tail would be wagging. So he just loved it, man. You know, going back to the beach, how much he loved that. When he would get out of the car, my parents' house is about a block and a half away from the beach, but he would stick up his nose and start sniffing the air, be like, are we at the beach? Really? Oh, we're here? You know, when he was two, we went to Thanksgiving up at the Poconos, and he tore his ACL or whatever that joint is for a dog. And he had to get surgery, and we got the surgery about a month later. And I remember bringing him home and talking to the doc, and they said, hey, you know, he's got to rest. He can't really be full go for months. I'm like, okay, yeah, I get it. They're like, well, do you want some sedatives? I'm like, nah. I looked at him, and I was like, nah, I think he's fine. It's no big deal. And a day later, I shot the vet a note, and I said, yeah, we're going to need those sedatives. Like a day after the ACL surgery, he basically was telling us, oh yeah, we're good, right? Go time. It's time to play and time to run around and go swimming, right? So fast forward to just a year and a half ago, you know, we moved out to Vegas. He was my company in the car. I drove him out here. I had to get the folks at VSIN were cool. They were like, hey, why don't you stay at, you know, the South Point until you get a house or whatever. I said, well, I've got a dog and I'm going to need to rent an apartment. So I rented an apartment with Aaron Oster for about 6-7 weeks. And Manti and me were out here in Vegas by ourselves in the fall of 2020. And then the family came out. And, you know, in late 2023, we started to sense like, man, his breath is absolutely terrible. You know, dogs lick themselves and eat things off the ground. And of course, you're going to have stinky breath, but it was just an extra level of stank. So we went and we got his teeth cleaned. No big deal. Come back home. And then about a month or two later, the stank was back. So we brought him back to the vet. We did the teeth cleaning again. And that's where they took a culture of his mouth. And they told us that he had carcinoma in his mouth. So we were devastated. It was March of 2024. And we were basically told, we've got about 3 or 4 months left in March of 2024. So my wife and I were crushed, my son as well. And, you know, with a dog, you could do, you know, a scan that takes, you know, spends thousands upon thousands of dollars, and maybe it hasn't spread. Maybe they can get it out. So we decided, let's just go the route of treating him and trying to beat this thing with medicine. And, you know, we started taking the medicine, and that was in the spring of 2024. And that's when I had the idea, my wife too, of like, hey, let's bring him back east. So me and him hopped in the car last summer, brought him back to his favorite spots. He went to the beach. He went to the Poconos. He went to my grandparents, or my wife's parents' house in New Hampshire. He had the best summer. Got to hit up all of his spots. And we kind of thought, all right, that's the swan song, right? So I bring him back to the vet after the trip is over. And he doesn't tell me this at the time, but he basically thought time was pretty short after that. But he told us of a Hail Mary option. It was a different medicine. We're going to try it out. And like Jaden Daniels against the Bears, like Doug Flutie, that Hail Mary connected, man. And that dog was awesome for the whole year. And eventually in this spring, he wasn't eating as much. He wasn't really taking the medicine. And, you know, as this week went on, you kind of knew. And, you know, what's so wild is, as you guys, I'm sure many of you have gone through it, is you just don't know when the right time is, and you don't want them to suffer. And we had someone come over to the house, and they told us earlier this week, you know, it's going to be time. And we weren't ready. And I don't think you're ever ready. And on Wednesday, he had the best day. He went on a nice walk. He went to the park with my family, and really got a great time with him on his last day. And it's so painful, but I'm so grateful for the 12 years that he was in my life. I'm so grateful that he made me a dog guy. Like, I'm all in, man. I don't know when we'll get our next. It's going to take some time to get over this one, but I'm all in. He was the best. Dogs are the best. And I think, you know, a lot of people told me this, like the worst thing about dogs is they don't live long enough. They don't live long enough. I wish they did. And I know that's why it's dog years. And in dog years, he was in his 80s, but and he looked it too. He was very distinguished. My phone, by the way, thinks pictures of him are two different dogs because he had the white face at the end and, you know, brown face in the beginning. But there are just so many things that I'm going to remember about Manti. And as he, you know, it's funny because we tried to be good dog owners and, hey, don't beg at the table. You got to eat your food. But once he got diagnosed with cancer, man, all bets were off. We were giving him everything. Here, have this, have this, have this. And one thing that he really loved were cheese sticks. And there would be times where I would pull a cheese stick out of the refrigerator and peel that top. And you would hear just a boom. A thud from the bed upstairs, and he would come running down the stairs like, hey, you got a cheese stick for me? I got you, buddy. It's really sad in my house right now. It's going to be hard, but I'm so happy that he was in my life. And I'm so happy, you know, that I won that bet. I'm glad that we had pictures before our wedding, but man, that name, did it get a couple stares every once in a while? Yeah, I named him Manti. There's our other dog, Lene. But as time wore on, I just looked at him and I'm like, this is the perfect name for our dog. And I'm going to miss him like crazy. I loved so many things about him. And I'll tell you what, he did not miss, he won't miss football season. He won't miss my frustrations, whether it be with Notre Dame or with a bet losing. He did not like when the big guy got angry, but he was the best. And I know I've gone long, and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know if I should talk about it on a VSiN show, talk about it to you guys here. But I wanted to air it out and talk about him and just reminisce to who he was, man. You know, it's funny. The vet told me when we went back for a checkup this winter, after Manti had really taken to that medicine, and he said he had to double check his notes to make sure it was the right dog he was looking at. And man, he said, fuck you, cancer. I'm going to battle this shit, and I'm going to live for an extra year. And he did. So before I get choked up, I'm going to get out of here. Thanks. Hopefully this wasn't too long. Maybe it was. I'll be honest. I don't really care. I just wanted to talk and hopefully you guys enjoy it. But thanks to Brett Ciancia. Thanks to Ryan Hunter, our producer. And thanks to all of you. Hopefully this wasn't too much of a babble. I appreciate you letting me get a little personal here. I won't do it often. I probably honestly won't ever do it again. But I wanted to talk about Manti and why he had his name and why, you know, he was the best. I loved him, man. He was the absolute best. And our house is hurting right now. But it was time. It was time, man. No more pain. You did what you had to do, man. And you kicked cancer's ass. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.